hear your dog. Sweeties.
Hey everyone, I'm Wa.
And I'm Chris, and welcome to DocuSweeties.
We're two longtime friends who discuss the riveting and sometimes trashy world of reality TV and docuseries.
Yes, but through our own lens, which can be, you know, on Max, it could be on Hulu, it could be on Netflix. At the end of the day, hopefully mildly sweet. And today it's actually on Max because we're talking about Quiet on Set, The Darkest Side of Kids TV. This is episode 3, The Darkest Secret, which literally sounds like an R.L. Stine Fear Street novel.
Yeah. Please. I put the title wrong. It's The Dark Side of Kids TV, The Darkest Secret. And it is. They just threw the darkest secret that we are aware of that I guess they had enough information on to us. So trigger warning, you guys, this one is got some child just terribleness.
I say there's sexual assault. There's a lot of like trauma. There's a lot of, you know, molestation and horrible abuse and just rape, everything. So
yeah,
all of it. Okay, babe. Just take care of yourselves.
Yeah. So in this one, we start off where we talk about Nickelodeon's like really group of kids that are doing really well with Dan Schneider. And we've got the show Drake and Jost. Now, that show was I was too old to watch that, but my sister definitely did. And they were the next generation of child stars. So it was no more JTT. You know, it was no more Andrew Keegan. This was the Drake and Josh.
Yeah. So, I also didn't watch it as I'm also too old and I wish I wasn't, but here we are. The Drake and Josh generation, they're the ones wearing like sweatpants, sweatshirts, dad sneakers and like slouchy socks. And they're wearing like, you know, baseball caps and stuff like that. Like that's the Drake and Josh generation of the millennials.
No. So the you're talking about like older, like Gen Zs that do that, right? Like the kids that were born in 2000 and millennials, I believe even the youngest millennial stops in 1996. So like, I'm like, these the people who are watching this is like my sister generation, born in 92, you know, 90.
Okay.
96. So who knows what they're dressing like?
Yeah.
I only pay attention to them.
I'll just say that I'm not super familiar with Drake nor Josh. Drake, but getting into this, the whole thing was Drake was the hot one. Drake was like the Disney kind of prototype of a singer, actor, very good looking, you know, could like, you can really sell that kind of kid, you know, like a kid you sell in two different avenues, you know, like that's how they make them. And Josh was the token fat kid, what seems like that, you know, like he, and also low key, this Josh kid, I think grows up to lose a bunch of weight because I think now he's a different looking person. But when Josh was a kid, and Loki, obviously I was too, so like this is not hate. We can all have moments. Josh looked like young Dan Schneider to me. So every time I look at this Drake and Josh flashback, I'm like, oh, so Drake Bell and a young Dan Schneider?
Okay. Like, I feel like Dan was giving opportunities to himself in more than one way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but yeah, apparently... Drake was a singer. But he was big in Mexico. He's still big in Mexico. Like, that's one of the things I took away from this. I said, this man is big in Mexico. He speaks Spanish and everything. Yeah. So good for him. And so then we've got Brian Peck. And last episode, we have the conversation where the kids are in there. Their parents ask to leave. The lawyers say, hey, this man has been arrested. Do you guys want to say anything? And cut to... we actually have a person who's willing to talk about their abuse and somebody who's widely known in this community. So they start working with Brian after he was working on the Amanda show. And this was a different set. This was Nickelodeon on Sunset, which I imagine is like the cool, hip, like Nickelodeon version of that. You know, like sometimes you have two like improv groups or two UCBs in LA. One is the traditional one and one does the more edgy comedy, that kind of thing, right? And so the dad, though, he was like, listen, him and Josh or Drake were really close. Drake's father, him and they were really close. The family had gone through a divorce. The father had gotten custody of Drake. So it was their bonding and their bonding time when he was ferrying him to auditions and doing a bunch of stuff. So we see a lot of cute, like, video of Drake from, like, 3 years old, 5 years old, like, in commercials in certain episodes. Like, he was in an episode of Seinfeld as, like, a punk kid in an arcade. Like, so he had had quite a roster of just, like, I don't know what they call walk-ons. I don't know what it is.
Maybe we'll say co-stars.
Co-stars. Yeah, and guest stars. But his father was like, we need to get him in the movies. Like, we really need to get him, like, a permanent something or other. And so when it came about that he was going to get Drake and Josh, he was super excited for that. And the dad, who, unlike a lot of other parents that we've heard on the show, is somebody who was, like, really involved. And he felt very uncomfortable about Brian. He was like, I feel like he felt like Brian was always touching Drake's arm or, like, having his arm around him. And listen, I would have been the same way, too. Like, get your hand off my kid. Why are you touching him? Like, you're not his aunt. You're not his uncle.
Exactly.
And so it was just a lot of that. And dad finally told production about it. Finally was like, hey, this is, I feel like he's a little too handsy with my child. Have a conversation with him. And do you know they told that man that Brian is gay? And so what he's picking up on is that, I guess, gay energy, and that the dad was homophobic. Like, they turned it around on him, sorry, and, like, made it seem like he was homophobic. So he didn't know how to, I think, manage that from then, because I'm sure he didn't want to seem like a bigot, but he just really was uncomfortable with the whole situation.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really heartbreaking to watch this man, you know, try and reconcile the fact that under his care, his he really tried to, like, advocate for Drake's safety, and he saw some things and, like, made some comments. At the same time, you know, Brian is, like, the dialect coach on set, as well as they're auditioning off set. They're working with him, and he's having parties, and he's, like, inviting people over to his, like, you know, toy filled home. And so, you know, God bless, you just have to, like, pay attention to your intuition.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it gets turned around on him by Brian pretty much going in Drake's ear and being like, dude, your dad should not be your manager. Like, this is Hollywood. In Hollywood, we have, like, professional people. Like, we have, like, agents and managers. Like, they know about this. Like, you're, let's just be honest, you're, like, podunk, you know, like, surfer hippie dad with, like, a long beard isn't going to, like, you know, be, like, calling up CAA and making the deals. Like, you know, he could really try and isolate Drake and his, like, sphere of influence from around him just by making it seem like his dad does not have his interests at heart, or doesn't even have the capacity to.
Yeah. And so how this ended up happening, though, was because of that, Drake wanted to then, like, go be with his mom more. And his mom lived in Orange County.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Didn't drive. And so then he started whispering in the mom's ear and was like, yeah, that he's not doing well with Drake. Drake could be doing so much more and blase, blase. And so she then asked Drake's father, hey, I'm going to take over. And I think that the father, and this is what they both say, is that, or this is what Drake says, is that he thinks that his father gave over to the mom and let the mom take over because he felt that Drake was pulling away from him, and it was his last ditch effort to ensure that Drake wouldn't pull away fully. It's what Drake wanted. It's what all of a sudden now the mom wants. And so he's like, I already put my son through a divorce. I don't want to cause any more stress on Drake, and I don't want to lose the relationship we have by being stubborn and not giving him what he wants.
Yeah.
And so he did. He signed everything over to the mother, gave her all the bank accounts, gave her, you know, all the information. And then she, from my opinion of being a person who doesn't even drive when you have a child who needs to go to auditions and shit, she doesn't make arrangements for her to be there in a way that his father was there in a way. And so that leads to opportunity for Brian, whom the father warned her about. The father said, here, take this. But let me tell you, that Brian Peck, he's weird. Keep Drake away from him at all costs. He's getting too close to Drake. But for whatever reason, the mother, I guess, maybe so upset with their divorce, did not believe her ex-husband. She put all of her faith in Brian. And the way that Drake tells it and the way that Drake's father tells it is that Brian tricked her. But I don't know. I have opinions about it where I'm like, unless you think that your ex was a bad parent, listening to any advice where they tell you that your child's in danger should be prudent, should be something that you're willing to do. And if you're not willing to do it, when it comes to just safety, not about money, not about like whatever, like keep him away from that guy. Here's everything. Keep him away from that guy. And you still don't. There's more going on with you than anything else, like as a parent. And that's just the way I feel. So parents come at me, I'm sorry, but like, that's just the way I feel.
Literally, it was just so easy for him because then he sort of be like, yeah, he has auditions. And she's like, well, I'm in Orange County. And so he's like, well, oh, you don't want to drive? Cool, cool, cool. So I'll go ahead. I'll drive from L.A., a grown-ass man, drive to Orange County, pick up your son, and drive back to L.A. And guess what? Now that I have your son, I did you a favor. It's like 6 o'clock. I really don't want to come home in traffic. So, like, guess what? Your son's going to sleep over at my fucking house. You, like, choosy beggar bitch. You're not going to say shit because I just did you a favor. And I have your son. And you're lazy. We're going to come and get him? Watch. Fine. We'll wait. And she doesn't. And so he does that. And it's really... It's hard.
Predatory.
Now, I think that obviously Brian masterminded the entire thing and obviously knew what he was doing to like groom and isolate victims. What is interesting is only that we don't go back in time and then be like, well, who was before Drake? Because like the fact that he got to Drake like this makes me feel like who the fuck else did he touch?
Yeah, it's all that John Wayne Gacy shit. Like, it's all of the same kind of like get in your family and like figure out a way to isolate folks and play on, you know, their weaknesses, which is that they really want their son to be famous and they, you know, don't want to take any opportunities away from him by alienating somebody like Brian, who has a lot of connections. And they, you know, just basically did what they thought was right. And then Drake, from his own words, ends up saying that, A, this is the first time he's ever talked about this publicly. B, that at first, the first couple nights he spent the night, it was fine. There was no weirdness. But then one night he's spending the night and he wakes up with this man in his pants. And then the next morning, like it happens. And in the next morning, you know, he's like, I'm so sorry. I shouldn't have done that. Like, it'll never happen again. You know, something's wrong with me. And so Drake doesn't tell anybody because now he's scared. He doesn't know what to say. And he's like, he apologized, so it's fine. And then it kept happening. And Drake says that it was the worst things you could do to any human being is what was done to him. So there's like court documents that show things like penetration and with a foreign object and like all manner of things without getting like dumb specific with us. And it is just heartbreaking to know that this person went through this for, I don't know how long, but it feels like more than a year. And he was living this double life. He thought that everyone would turn against him if he said anything because everyone loved Brian so much. I think there was also a fear of ruining his career as well. And he didn't tell his dad because I think he knew that his dad would be devastated and would probably do something to Brian. And just like a lot of like guilt and shame, I think, as you know, associated with it. And that's when he started to like do drugs and drink and whatnot. And he finally got a girlfriend and he kind of utilized his girlfriend as a way to kind of slowly pull himself away from Brian. And one day he's at his girlfriend's house and Brian is blowing him up. Like, I don't know about what, but he just keeps calling him and the phone is on or it's vibrating. And the mother's like, what's going on? And I think Drake answers and then says, you know, I'm at such and such's house. You know, I'll talk to you later. And just like hangs up the phone. And the mother thinks that conversation is odd. And then Brian starts to call the girlfriend's family's Lineland phone.
Last night, yeah.
That's when the mother is like, what is going on? Not his mother, not Drake's mother, the girlfriend's mother.
So what is going on? And then she pulls him aside and she's like, what's going on? And he's like, nothing. What are you talking about? And she's like, no. Let me tell you what I'm seeing. This man just blew you up on your phone. And then he blew up our landline. And an adult male does not blow up the landline of a person that they're mentoring or whatever. This is not okay behavior. And then,
yeah, like basically Drake was supposed to go to Disneyland with him. And then Drake wanted to like hang out with his girlfriend because he's a teenager and like doesn't want to go to Disneyland anymore. Like, where he's going to be mobbed with you and you want to like get like free shit and or be with your like little boy tie. He wants to like whatever, like be like probably feeling up some boobies or whatever it is. And so he's staying at just like this chill house that's probably like making him feel like, you know, there's like a home ass vibe to it. The fact that this mom has the wherewithal to like read this little boy's body language when he's getting these phone calls. Also, side note is I've been in a situation where someone with mental issues like has called me a bunch of fucking times in a row, like blown up like either my cell phone and at the time like the work landline in such a way that was like when it's happening, it's incredibly traumatic and jarring because that person's like in a cycle, they're going to keep calling, you know, like that person is already making whatever choices they're making. And so you're like falling victim to it. And then people are seeing it. It's really horrifying. So basically, yeah, when she says that, he's just like, oh, my God, it was such a relief. Like to hear Drake tell the story. We don't know who his girlfriend was. Like, we don't know if she was like an actress or whatever, or just like a nice girl from the Valley. Who knows? But yeah, like that mom, you know, like called it out. Because she also was like, what is this? And he didn't want to say it first. But like, I think that to be able to like unburden himself, because specifically this man was like predatory coming after him, like, you know, I'm so glad that he like threw himself a lifeline in that way.
Yeah. Yeah. And so then he says that he recalls that after Brian was arrested, that he wasn't named in it, but I think they knew that it was at least Dan suspected it was him and called him and just asked him if he was okay. And that really meant a lot to him. Drake. So Drake is staunchly like he thinks that Dan was a good guy, which is so different from the rest of this documentary. And this is a little weird for me when like the documentary is kind of focusing on Dan Schneider and all the things that he didn't do and did do to women and men around him and the kids. But we have this one episode 3, where we get Drake's version, and Drake is like, no, I thought he was great. So it was just such a different, like, you could see how someone could be different to so many different people and kind of keep up this charade. And so that when someone would come forward, it would be doubt that he was not the greatest guy, right?
Question, why aren't they naming the executives that actually hired Dan and Brian? How come they're not telling us the Nickelodeon executives that were like, working there at the time that you know said yes to the penis shit and people in all the cum shots on poor Spears's face, you know what I'm saying? Like, well, because it is of course about Dan, even though Dan's gonna have like toxic behavior and the massages are weird and it's fucked up and he's probably, you know, like sexist and all the shit, racist, like for sure. I hate to say this, you could literally write like multiple docuseries about like multiple television shows that like that person, you know, did. He, to my knowledge, still didn't fuck anyone. Now, I'm not quite sure they're trying to like say that or never. Obviously, Brian's a goddamn monster and this I heard handy. They're going to like they're going to say some other Nickelodeon hires. It's almost like they want to say this is a Nickelodeon fucked up situation, but they don't want to say Nickelodeon or Nick in the title either to be sued or whatever. But I feel like It's interesting, though, that like they won't name names of people that like put these people in position to continually assault people, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's like they can't go down the rabbit hole. They're down the rabbit hole. They're just not down it as far as they need to. But they wanted to get this message out to us anyway.
Yeah.
The saddest part of this is once Brian is arrested, I mean, all of these people like. We're talking about the episode 4, but Drake calls his father and is like, hey, did you hear that Brian got arrested? And Drake's father is like,
oh my God, I'm so happy they finally got him. I knew something was up with that dude. And I think Drake was about to tell him that, yeah, it was me, Dad. And he couldn't because he said, I knew my dad was so emotional and I knew my dad had seen it coming from a mile away. And he told us that this was an issue. And he starts to tear up with even thinking about his dad having this information, knowing, and, you know, and then he's like, yeah, Dad, it's crazy that that person came through. Like, he on the phone lied to his father when he was actually going to tell him it was him. But like, he lied to him in that moment and couldn't tell his father that it was him, that it had been happening to him. And I just think like, that is devastating. And there is literally no way that Drake, as like a 15-year-old child, would have had the wherewithal to understand his father's worry, because it's not like, like most men don't have conversations with their sons about another man possibly molesting them. Like, most parents don't have conversations with their child at all about it and about what to do and to not be scared. Like, these are things that you have to like instill in your kid. Otherwise, someone else could just lie to you and make you feel like you're, you know, whatever. But the whole time, like, Drake is like, my father knew, and I fought him, and I told him to go away. And then I had no protection. And so I can only imagine he just felt so much shame that he couldn't tell his dad.
I hope that this alleviates some for him. I really hope that this brings him some sort of, like, peace and or more money from Nickelodeon, okay? I mean, just for his, you know, God bless. So. That's the end of this episode, my loves, but we have one more in this series, which is, again, Quiet on Set. And then after that, we'll find something new to talk about. And let's just be honest. Is it going to be happy and great and really like lighthearted and like, I mean, no the, conflict and like,
no, the docuseries not really never matter. Are. They never are. The docuseries are, they're never. I mean, we'd have to go back to Tindler Swindler or like, I don't know.
Tiger King. All right. Yeah. Where's the I want more crazy characters and less like horribleness. That's what I love someone to make fun of. Anyway, at the end of the day, you can support us by doing so many things. I'll tell you the free shit. You can go to any sort of social media that you have and type in at DocuSweeties. We are at DocuSweeties on Instagram, at DocuSweeties on TikTok, at DocuSweeties1 on X, and we have a Facebook group. The DocuSweeties Podcast Facebook group. If you haven't yet, give us 5 stars in my lovely, very long review where you talk about how much you love us, I would really appreciate it. And not just me, this one over here. And so I'll tell you even other things that we even more would appreciate, even more. Because this is why we need your money for grammar classes.
Yes. So if you would like to support us, you can go to patreon.com/docusweeties. You get a live every first Monday of the month, which is this upcoming Monday, April 1st. Ooh, fools. And you also get exclusive content like we did Love is Blind exclusively on our Patreon, and you get the episodes as soon as we're done with it. So if you're at all interested in that content, please go on ahead and support us on Patreon at patreon.com/docuspeedies. Okay. Talk to you later. Bye.